Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. They said he'd been too cool on health care reform, too reserved. Not last night. President Barack Obama cited history all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt and drew a sharp line in the sand.
I'm not the first president to take up this cause, but I am determined to be the last.
There was real tension in the Hall of Congress, real passion from the podium, giant stakes, and maybe a restart on an epical issue this hour. On Point, the president's big speech on health care reform and whether he can now get it done. You can join the conversation. Did the president win your confidence last night? Is it time to do this or bar the door? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear in this hour from lawmakers on Capitol Hill, players in the thick of it on the path ahead. Joining me first from Washington is Gerald Seib, executive Washington editor and Capitol Journal columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Jerry, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So did he do it? Did he get it over the mark, over the bar?
You know, I'm not sure where the bar is on the subject right now, so it's hard to answer that question. I think he probably went some distance toward doing the first thing he needed to do, which was to restart the debate on slightly different terms. And he shifted the terms to his terms. That doesn't mean that he's going to win the debate on those terms or that those terms are universally popular. You know, obviously they're not. But I think it allowed them to make a clean break from the summer where things had slid, had been sliding downhill for Democrats, and allowed the conversation to begin on slightly different terms and probably with a slightly more excited Democratic Party behind him.
What did you think of the tenor of the speech, Jerry?
It had a little more edge in it than I expected, and I suppose some will argue a little more edge than was necessarily wise, because it was a strange combination of throwing some bones toward Republicans, of saying, for example, I'm willing to open the door to medical malpractice reform, which is at the top of the Republicans' wish list, and taking an idea from John McCain about how you cover people who can't get coverage because of pre-existing conditions and throwing that into the mix. But at the same time, sort of openly saying to Republicans, you know, if we think you're being unfair to us in this debate, we're going to call you out, and I'm not going to tolerate people who just want to kill this thing. So I think that latter part was designed to get the base motivated and was necessary because right now the people who oppose a health care overhaul have more intensity than the people who want one, and I think he has to try to address that intensity gap as well.
We wonder if that will be true going forward. I saw the president rolling up his sleeves. Like his plan or not, this was not the too cool for school Obama. And then, as you say, this bottom line for elected critics of his health care plan.
I will not waste time with those who have made the calculation that it's better politics to kill this plan than to improve it. I won't stand by while the special interests use the same old tactics to keep things exactly the way they are. If you misrepresent what's in this plan, we will call you out. And I will not accept the status quo as a solution. Not this time. Not now.
President Obama last night, Jerry Seib in Washington. There's been many calls for Barack Obama to kind of get off the pedestal, get into the fray. He seemed in the fray there. And certainly, I mean, we had heckling. We had the you lie cry from the very classy South Carolina congressman. But do you see this being effective? Can he push it over the hill with this down in the arena, in the ring approach, Jerry?
Well, two things. I mean, first, he is in the arena now, and you cannot now exit the arena. And that's pretty much why the White House waited so long to get to this point, because they wanted the natural process in Congress to progress as far as it could before they got to this point, because once you get here, it becomes the Obama plan for sure, and it's him versus his opponents, and it's on his back. And we're there now, so that's the first thing to say. The second thing I think to say is that I think a lot of the interaction now depends on those moderates in the middle. People who on the right aren't going to vote for anything this year are not going to vote for anything this year. Nothing last night changed that. People on the left may grumble about having to make compromises, but I don't think they're going to abandon the president. The key is the Blue Dog Democrats in the House and the conservative to moderate Democrats, and they seemed pretty satisfied last night that there was enough compromising here to make them happy. And a few moderates in the Senate, Democrats and a couple of Republicans, who maybe will get a little more comfortable to go along for the ride. That's the ball game right now, and a lot of the theatrics on either side don't matter that much, I think.
We're going to be asking this a lot in this hour, but do your math for us, Jerry. Does it add? Now, maybe he's said to Republicans, you're on or you're off, but we're going ahead. Can it pass the House? Can it pass the Senate in a manner that would override a filibuster? Do you see the votes there?
I think one way or the other, by hook or by crook, Democrats think it is imperative they get something done this year. Small, medium, or large, whatever the size and shape, I think the prospect of failure and the price they could pay in the middle and on the left for that is too high for them not to do something this year. And it may not be pretty, and it may happen without much bipartisanship, if any, and it may not even happen with all the Democrats along, but at the end of the day, I think they'll have something to show for this.
Something this year. In a big speech last night, Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be with you.
The president, as he reached the sort of emotional climax of his speech last night, cited a letter that he had received from the late Senator Ted Kennedy about high hopes and the challenge for all Americans of health care reform.
He expressed confidence that this would be the year that health care reform, that great unfinished business of our society, he called it, would finally pass. He repeated the truth that health care is decisive for our future prosperity. But he also reminded me that it concerns more than material things. What we face, he wrote, is above all a moral issue. At stake are not just the details of policy, but fundamental principles of social justice and the character of our country.
The character of our country put on the line, rhetorically anyway, there by the President of the United States. Joining us now from Washington is Noam Levy, health policy reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Noam, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
First, that challenge, does that resonate across the aisle a little at all? Does it matter if the call to character is a bipartisan rallying cry or not?
I don't know that it does that much, in large part because I think the president and his congressional allies don't hold out much hope of getting much Republican support for whatever they come up with. But it may have more resonance actually on the left, where the president is trying to hold his liberal supporters. Ted Kennedy was obviously the lion of the left, and I think there was a lot of hope that at the end of the day he would be able to bring the liberal wing of the party behind a healthcare solution that was possibly more centrist, and I think that was more the audience that the president was aiming for with those final remarks.
Let's go to the substance of what the president was laying out last night. How much remains from the Obama vision of early this year, maybe the greatest vision of Democrats in Congress? What did you see compared to that on the table last night, Noam?
Well, you know, the president had a challenge in terms of refocusing on the fundamental priorities that he laid out earlier this year, and that actually there's a lot of consensus behind. So that's why we heard a lot from the president last night about changing the way the insurance market works for folks, creating new protections to help people avoid getting cut off if they get sick, to prevent insurance companies from denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. Those are the kinds of things that have been on the table for a long time, but I think have been overshadowed as other elements of the healthcare debate about a new government insurance program, about how to pay for this, have come to dominate the debate. So in many ways, the vision that he articulated last night was not very different from what he's been talking about for most of the year and what congressional Democrats have been talking about for most of the year.
But it was certainly in more vigorous terms. Here he was talking about how this might be paid for and who had paid for what with what deficits in the past.
I will not sign a plan that adds one dime to our deficits, either now or in the future. I will not sign it if it adds one dime to the deficit, now or in the future, period. And to prove that I'm serious, there will be a provision in this plan that requires us to come forward with more spending cuts if the savings we promised don't materialize. Now, part of the reason I faced a $1 trillion deficit when I walked in the door of the White House is because too many initiatives over the last decade were not paid for, from the Iraq War to tax breaks for the wealthy. I will not make that same mistake with health care.
There's a political zinger there, but also a claim on deficits. No, we just got 30 seconds before the break. But in short, he will not sign a plan that adds one dime to our deficits. Does that look doable?
Well, that's a big challenge. That is a very, very big challenge, and that's going to require some tricky math. I think that's and that's something that we probably won't know for sure until the very, very last minute when we see whatever emerges on Capitol Hill in terms of a health care bill.
Is that all about how much money is put forward to help the poor buy health insurance once they're required to do it?
Well, that's driving the cost for sure. The tricky part is how do you offset those costs? Are there going to be new taxes? Are there going to be new fees? Are there going to be cuts in the way the federal government pays for Medicare services? That's really where the rubber meets the road, and that's also where the political challenge looms largest for the president, I think, and his congressional allies.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the president's big speech on health care reform and whether he can now get it done. Noam Levy is with us, health policy reporter for the Los Angeles Times. We've got a blue dog Democrat coming up and a big progressive as well. Here's and a big sort of psychological interpreter of the president's communication skills. Here's a Republican responding already. This is Congressman Todd Akin of Missouri, interviewed by St. Louis radio station KMOX this morning. He complained that Obama's speech was clearly partisan.
The tone was much more combative than I would have expected, and the promises far more grandiose. And my sense was he was playing to his Democrat congressional base, trying to get them back on track. But it was not geared to the public, particularly to the Republicans. It was very aggressive and not at all in the sense of solving problems.
Grandiose or suited to the moment, President Obama looked to the future as he came to his conclusion last night, said he still believes in an America that can accomplish great things.
We did not come to fear the future. We came here to shape it. I still believe we can act, even when it's hard. I still believe. I still believe that we can act when it's hard. I still believe we can replace acrimony with civility and gridlock with progress. I still believe we can do great things. And that here and now, we will meet history's test.
Big talk last night. Noam, stand by. Let's take a couple of calls. Robert in Davenport, Iowa. You're on the air.
I thought it was a great speech. I will tell you that I think, to keep talking about how much more we've added to the deficit, et cetera, I think we're paying too much. For example, we pay 16% of our GDP, while France pays only 10%. We're number 37th. We don't cover everyone. They do. And they're number one. The difference between how much we would spend if we paid the 10% that they spend and perhaps come closer to being number one would be $800 billion. We could add 500,000 new police officers. We could rebuild our state hospitals. We could pay half of 500,000 medical school primary doctors.
Robert, we've got it. Those are strong numbers, and it sounds like you're on board, and I appreciate your call. Let me get one more from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Rebecca, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I was completely impassioned by Obama's speech and once again proud to be an American as I was at the inauguration. I thought he did a great job of talking about the character of the nation and trying to drive away from this concept of socialism. There's many things as a country that we have, quote-unquote, socialized, clean water, good roads to drive on. And the question that we face as a nation is, does only the rich or the upper middle class deserve to have decent health care, or is that something that we as a nation want to provide for all of our people as a social program? And I thought it was great. I'm completely proud to be an American. I thought it was a great speech.
Rebecca, thank you very much for your call. Noam, how much is that kind of reaction going to matter? You know, we've heard the whole spectrum, libertarians saying no way, no how. Rebecca saying she's completely impassioned, and you hear Robert's numbers. How much is public opinion at this point going to factor in here?
Well, I think it'll factor in quite a lot. I mean, one of the reasons why the president delivered his speech when he did and how he did it was because the polls have been heading south for the better part of the summer. And so, you know, one of the challenges that the president had certainly was trying to recapture the public passion that he rode to the White House and that he basked in, frankly, in the first few months of his administration. I think that's in part why the clip that you played you could almost envision candidate Obama delivering that speech. That was exactly the kind of rhetoric, the kind of sort of soaring promise, the vision for a sort of gauzier, better future that Obama talked about as a candidate, and that he has not talked about as much and as passionately when he's talked about health care over the past few months.
And getting tough, too. Noam, stand by. I want to welcome in to our conversation from Atlanta, Georgia, Drew Weston. He's a professor of psychology at Emory University. He turned a lot of heads with a recent essay on the Huffington Post called Why the President Has Been, this is before the speech, Has Been Losing on Health Care and What He Needs to Say. You can read that at our website, onpointradio.org. Drew Weston, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So you've been a pretty big critic, not of healthcare reform per se, but of the president's championing of it. Was your view changed last night?
You know, it's interesting. I had really mixed feelings about it. I had the same. I mean, I was a very strong supporter of the president. Was involved in various ways in the campaign, I had feelings running in two opposite directions. One was, I was stirred by some of the rhetoric as watching him as a candidate, as I was, throughout, you know, his win of the nomination, et cetera, and the speech in Denver and all those kind of things. At the same time, it strikes me that that this would have been the time to draw the line in the sand about bipartisanship. If you were a person who didn't know American history, you wouldn't know that the Republicans have been, for example, that they fought against Social Security, that they fought against Medicare.
I think he did mention the latter.
He mentioned it, but he also said, and there were a lot who joined with us on it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they were the vocal opposition. They were the opposition to children's health. He called out Orrin Hatch as someone who helped for children's health, but, you know, George W. Bush vetoed children's health. I mean, a lot of kids who have not gotten health care for the last 2 years because the Republican Party battled it. And
So don't downplay ideology, but highlight it?
Well, you know what he hasn't done, and this is what Republicans have very effectively done, is to tell a story. You know, their story is government's the problem, not the solution. And Ronald Reagan just so beautifully branded that story in the minds of the American people that even when the president yesterday, for the first time in his presidency, started to say, you know, maybe there's another story, he was almost apologetic for it. You know, I understand a lot of people don't like government and there's good reason to suspect it, etc. There's an alternative vision of government, which isn't government should run anything, which is the branding by the Republicans of what progressives or liberals or Democrats are for. And it isn't, you know, that Democrats they all want single payer, and you know, I'm the one who's willing to compromise. You know, the reality is that it's a small percent of the Democratic Party who want a single payer system, and that there's the flip side is that what the Republicans want is to block reform. They've made it really clear. They've done it over and over and over again. Mm. He keeps reaching out his hands to them, and they keep slapping it back.
Drew Weston, you've written that Obama, you said, unlike FDR, just can't seem to get himself worked up enough to experience or express anger when it's appropriate. I want to ask you about a couple of moments last night. Here's one when he spoke directly about misinformation that's been out over some weeks now about proposed health care reforms and the allegation of death panels.
Some of people's concerns have grown out of bogus claims spread by those whose only agenda is to kill reform at any cost. The best example is the claim made not just by radio and cable talk show hosts, but by prominent politicians, that we plan to set up panels of bureaucrats with the power to kill off senior citizens. Now, such a charge would be laughable if it weren't so cynical and irresponsible. It is a lie, plain and simple.
It is a lie, said the president. And then this on concerns about health care and illegal immigrants.
There are also those who claim that our reform efforts would ensure illegal immigrants. This, too, is false. The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegally. It's not true.
That's a lie from Congressman Joe Wilson of South Carolina in the hall. Very unusual kind of straight-up heckling of the President of the United States. Drew Weston, is that not what you were asking for? There's the President kind of, you know, dukes up.
I think in both cases you see exactly what he did well and exactly what he did badly. And what you just heard was the well part. You know, in the first case he says the death panels are a lie. You'll notice that when he said even prominent politicians, that's as close as he's been able to get to say, actually, they have a name. They're called Republicans. You know, and in fact, he then went on to undo exactly what he said by saying what a great job Ted Kennedy's friend Charles Grassley has done. Well, Charles Grassley is one of those people who's promulgated the death penalty lie. So right after attacking the lie and then saying anonymous naysayers, even some politicians have said something about it, he then takes it all back and gives a big nod to Grassley, who's in fact one of the liars in chief. You know, so the second case when he says, you know, about illegal immigrants, he says that's a lie. He had just a few minutes earlier said, from now on, when people lie, when people behave uncivilly, I'm going to call them out. So now a member of Congress attacks him with that kind of really inappropriate heckling right in the middle of his speech. And instead of stopping and saying, you know what, this is just what I've been talking about. This is just why we've been seeing health reform getting blocked year after year after year, and this is just the kind of example of incivility that we've been seeing with people bringing their guns to town hall meetings when a congressman or president is speaking. You know, Congressman, why don't you stand up and take a bow? That's the kind of thing that would get the Republicans to stop doing it. And instead, you know, the White House issued some kind of tepid statement afterwards about, well, we'll just, you know, we're going to move on, and you know, it was unfortunate, but we'll move on. It's not unfortunate. That's the kind of behavior that is dangerous. Frankly, you know, I've got a couple of small kids. If I were the President of the United States and people were circling my speeches with my town hall meetings with loaded weapons, I'd be pretty concerned. We have a history of assassinations in this country. And just the last point on it is that, you know, it's one thing to say we're not going to cover illegal immigrants. That's a lie. That's actually in many ways accepting the whole way the conservatives have framed this, which is, you know, okay, so what are you going to do when the daughter of a 12-year-old daughter of an illegal immigrant shows up at the emergency room with appendicitis? Are you going to stop and say, well, let me see your we don't have identity cards because conservatives don't want those either. So what are you going to say? You're going to say, well, show me your documentation. Oh, she doesn't have documentation. Let's send you back on the bus to Mexico. You know, it's the same thing as just a moment earlier he said, and they said that they're going to, you know, that we're going to cover abortions. That's a lie. Well, you know, there's another side to it, which is, what you'd think that a progressive president would say is, it is none of anybody's damn business when someone decides to start their family, other than them, a woman, her husband,
yeah.
Or her partner, and her doctor, and her faith and her conviction.
So you're looking for the full, unadulterated, progressive position from this president. Maybe that's just not his position.
Well, you know, the problem is that there are historical moments when you can affect change, and he promised to be a change president. And FDR, you know, didn't say, well, let me give, you know, a few hundred billion dollars in concessions to the bankers. He said, I welcome their hatred. And he turned the country against the bankers. He turned the country against the robber barons. That's why we have Social Security today. That's why we had in place the Wall Street reforms that then got removed over the last few years that caused this last crisis.
Professor Drew Weston, author of The Political Brain, we've got to move, but we appreciate your perspective very much, and thank you for sharing it today.
Pleasure to be on.
No, I'm going to leave you stand by. I want to go to Washington and write to a progressive player in this whole debate. With us from the Capitol is Anthony Weiner, Democratic congressman from New York, has strongly supported a public option. Congressman Weiner, thank you very much for being with us. Did you hear the support from the president for the public option that you needed last night to be on board?
Well, you know, I heard him explain why you need competition, why you need to bring down costs, and by extension, I heard him support the public option. I mean, look, there's nothing in the plan that does achieve the objective of keeping insurance companies honest and holding down costs if you remove the public option. I mean, I, like most members of Congress, are open to other ideas, but in as much as he explained why it's in there and explained why it was an important imperative of all of this, I heard enough. I mean, look, I would have liked to hear him say much more clearly two things that I haven't heard him say. One is a clear, full-throated defense of Medicare, single-payer, government-financed, government-run health care that works, that people like. And secondly, to explain that the insurance industry needs someone to keep an eye on them. They take enormous amount of money out of the system, don't really give very much back in exchange for it. But I think that the president understands that without some form of competition, the cost savings that we so badly need can't be achieved.
But there's been a lot of talk from progressive Democratic congressmen like yourself that if there wasn't a public option firmly fixed in this plan, that you wouldn't be on board, that you would not vote for it. Is this enough? Do you think that the progressives in the House will come around, say yes, and stamp it, even if it's not entirely there? He left that option open last night.
Well, there's got to be some cost containment. And right now, the only mechanism that we have is a very watered down, I should say, Tom, public option. If the public option somehow is jettisoned from the plan, then the president has more problems than just with those of us who believe in the idea of competition. He's got a problem with the Congressional Budget Office. He has a problem with fiscal hawks, because whatever cost savings you're going to get, you're not going to get. Look, there are three parts to this problem that the president laid out the way only a president can lay it out. One, there are a lot of people who are uninsured and all the problems that come from that. Two, all of us who have health insurance are paying way too much in terms of taxes, premiums, and everything else. And three, you know, and the problems that we have with insurance companies. And three, the costs in general to the system are way too high. He doesn't have any arrow in his quiver except the public option at this point that is going to attack that final problem. So it's not just progressives. All Americans who are concerned about the deficit are going to have problems as well.
Congressman, do you see a meaningful health care reform package passed this year, as the White House is now saying will happen? Do you see it?
Well, if the president keeps his foot on the gas and gets more and more clear every single day about exactly what he wants. Now, remember, he referred to my plan, my plan, my plan. There is no document anywhere that contains that legislative language that he described last night. Now, maybe they're going to produce one. I think that if he continues to get more and more focus on what exactly it is that we need to do, we are going to have substantive, transformative health care reform in this country. If he continues to take a strategy that was in play in August, where we all kind of flail around and shout at one another, I think it gets less likely. But I think yesterday was an important sign from the president of the United States that the time to get this done had arrived, and he was prepared to invest energy and substantive proposals to get it done. That's very heartening.
Big speech. It's not over. Congressman Anthony Weiner of New York, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the president's big speech on health care reform last night and whether he can now get it done. Noam Levy is with us, health policy reporter for the Los Angeles Times. We'll be joined in just a second by Congressman Adam Schiff of California. Here's Republican Eric Cantor on ABC this morning. House Minority Whip, Republican from Virginia, sounding a little conciliatory, but not really.
The fact is, there are probably close to 90% of the citizens of this country that do have insurance. Most of the people that have insurance like the insurance they have, but we've got to do something about the cost. There is no question that the current system is unacceptable. We cannot sustain the current system, so we've got to work together to find some ways to bring down those costs.
Republican Minority Whip Eric Cantor this morning. And joining us right now from Washington is Congressman Adam Schiff, Democrat of California, member of the Democrats' Blue Dog Coalition, fiscal conservatives. Congressman Schiff, thanks very much for being here.
Hey, Tom, it's great to join you.
Are you on board with the president or worried about the cost? Where do you stand this morning?
Well, I would say yes to both. I am on board with the president, and I think he did a magnificent job last night. I think what he said about controlling cost and working more to make sure that this is a deficit-neutral proposal all were very sound points, and I'm confident we will have a bill by the end of the year.
Deficit neutral. Noam Levy's with us from the L.A. Times. He's saying, you know, that's tough to judge still. A lot of factors still in play there. I mean, are you really confident that this will not, as the president said, add one dime to the national debt, the deficit?
Well, he was very explicit about it, not just saying that legislatively it has to be deficit neutral because that's already been a part of the bill, but going further and for the first time saying that he's prepared to require spending cuts if the expected savings don't materialize. And that's a commitment that, you know, the Congress will hold him to. So I think we've seen a new level of discipline in terms of making sure this is deficit neutral. But there's another point I think even more significant in the long run, and that is whether we reduced overall health care expenditures. Because, of course, when he's talking about the program being deficit neutral, he's just talking about the government's cost, not what all of us pay in our individual capacities as well. And that's an area where I think there's still more to be done to make sure that we bend that healthcare cost curve, that we make sure that we don't continue to see healthcare costs rise three times faster than wages.
Congressman, we've got a caller from Georgia with a question about illegal immigration. That's a big issue in California as well. Do you mind if I take it? Bring him on?
Sure, sure.
Rick in North Augusta, Georgia. Rick, you're on the air with Congressman Schiff and Noam Levy.
Hello.
Hi.
Actually, I just wanted to comment on Mr. Wilson's comment. I don't agree.
Congressman Wilson, who yelled out in the middle of the speech, in the president's face, "You lie."
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's uncharacteristic of him, and so that leads me to question, is there any substance to that allegation? Was the president untruthful? And the reason that I really think about that is, from the very beginning, this has been a situation where you can't even have a thoughtful conversation with your neighbor because everything's been bait and switch. If you found something undefensible in the House bill, you were told, well, that won't be the bill anyway, look at the Senate bill. If you found something undefensible in the Senate bill, you were told, well, that's not finalized yet. So with the sand shifting so much, how can anyone know what the facts are or accuse anyone else of not wanting to work with them in a bipartisan manner when the facts seem to me to be so fluid, and you can't ever have anyone, including the president, commit to anything particular to really discuss.
Let's take that issue straight up, Rick, and thanks for your call. Congressman, there's a constituent from across the border, from Joe Wilson's district. What about this issue of illegal immigration and coverage? I mean, I'm reading everywhere that that it's right in the text of these bills that illegal immigrants, would not be included. How do you read it? And what about Rick's complaint about the ambiguity?
Well, I mean, the bill says exactly that none of the funds in this will go to illegal immigrants. And I don't know how the bill could be more explicit on that point. And you can say, well, I don't believe the bill or I don't believe the text, but that's really not much of an argument to make. And I have to say that I was just appalled when Representative Wilson yelled that out. To me, it seemed like the culmination of some of the ugly tirades we've seen around the country, but now we're seeing it on the House floor among people who are supposed to be examples of civility, not the opposite. But the reality is the bill is quite explicit on this. None of the funds in the bill can go to someone who's an illegal immigrant. And if there are ways to make it more explicit, I'm sure we'd be happy to do it. But to say, well, I don't believe the written word, I guess you can make that argument, but it just doesn't carry a whole lot of water.
Noam Levy, let me just ask you about that. You know, some critics have said that as the bill stands, House bills anyway, illegal immigrants, they might be able to somehow get covered because they don't have to verify their residency status. I mean, we don't have ID cards, so the black and white it may be clear, but is there some alternate reality likely to emerge here?
Well, I mean, once you get into the nitty-gritty, and I'm sure Congressman Schiff can talk about this as well, that it does become difficult to verify the immigration status. That's true.
The country we have
right now,
yeah.
And it could potentially be true if illegal immigrants are seeking any kind of government service.
Tom, just to add on to that, it's certainly true that I think at most hospitals, when someone shows up at the emergency room in the middle of a heart attack, they don't check ID and they don't on the spot before they provide treatment see whether you're legally entitled to it. And, you know, that isn't going to change. There's nothing in this bill that says, you know, at emergency rooms we're going to start making sure we verify residency before we treat emergency patients. So you could claim, well, because we're not changing the status quo at the ER, that somehow this bill now provides a new entitlement, but I just don't think that's a fair reading of the bill. You know, again, this is sort of indicative of many other aspects of the debate around the health care reform, and that is that it doesn't matter what the bill says to, you know, to some folks. They're just determined to be against it, and you can spell it out as clear as day, and that's not going to satisfy them.
But the president was trying, I'd say, with all his might last night to reach across, if there's any reaching that can be done, and at the same time to push back against the mischaracterizations that he described. And you've had some of these pretty tough tirades in your own backyard. You had a town hall back in August that was kind of off the hook. Do you think that a speech like this may bring some of those very angry opponents of this legislation around?
You know, I don't think it'll bring some of the real angry folks around, but it may bring a great many Americans, you know, who are not out there necessarily shouting, but who have concerns that are, you know, responsible concerns. You know, as the president said the other night, nothing in this bill is going to, you know, force you out of the private plan you have. Well, I've had people, you know, ask me, well, let's say I'm in a plan that I like, but a public option is created.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom, I support a public option because as a blue dog, frankly, I think it pushes costs down. So I think it's consistent with my blue dog ideology. But let's say the public plan is cheaper and an employer decides to move employees into a public plan. Does that mean I won't be able to keep my private plan? That's a legitimate question to ask, and that's an issue we're working on and need to make sure we have good answers for. I think that what the president did last night is really talk to people that have reasonable concerns about the bill because either they don't understand its provisions or they do understand its provisions but want to make sure that there aren't unintended consequences. And I think he has a really unsurpassed capability of speaking directly to the American people, rising above the partisan fray, finding the common ground. And he's absolutely right when he says 80% of this we're in agreement on. And we should be able to, as reasonable people looking out for the best interests of the country, resolve the other 20%.
Do you think that's going to happen? Your bottom line, are you going to get meaningful health care reform this year, as the White House is now promising?
I think we are. And, you know, again, it's going to have some things in it that I don't like, perhaps, or be missing things that I really would love to have in it. That's the nature of the legislative process. But I do think that this is a test, and there are other important tests out there, of whether we can still do the big things. We have to be able to tackle health care. We have to be able to tackle energy. These are vital things for the nation's future. And I think there's a great deal at stake. People, you know, point out, well, the president has his presidency riding on this issue, and this was about his leadership as much as it is about health care. But for all of us in the Congress, as well as in the executive, it's about something, you know, far bigger than that. It's about whether America can still tackle the really big challenges. And I believe we can, which is why I think we're going to have a health care bill.
Congressman Adam Schiff of California, Blue Dog Democrat, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Noam, we've got questions from some of our listeners. Let's take one right here. Karen, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My big concern with this health care bill is that it's huge, it's complex. We can't agree on what's in it. We can't agree on who's covered. We can't agree on how much it's going to cost. And the big thing that worries me is, how am I, as a patient, going to know what's covered or what's even allowed? How is my doctor going to manage the complexity of all this, knowing what I can have and what I can't have?
Now, the president said, though, last night, if I may, Karen, if you're covered, you're going to have your coverage. You'll have your doctor. What's the confusion?
Well, my understanding is that, you know, some things are covered and some things are not covered, and some things will be allowed and some things will not be allowed, depending on what your situation is and what your health is.
But when he says your coverage won't change, if you're covered now, you'll have your coverage, your same coverage, and the same doctor, your doctor. I mean, you know, that seems pretty black and white, or does it not?
Well, I want to move into what this is leading up to.
Okay.
The huge government bureaucracy that's going to be needed to manage all these questions for people who are on the government plan. And I just don't understand why that kind of cost is not being talked about and how people think that this is going to actually save money.
What about the president speaking to that? He said last night, you know, in history, this country's done big, hard things before. We've done Social Security. We've done Medicare. Are you not persuaded by that? The public option here, he said, might only cover, I don't know, 5% of Americans.
And how many people believe that Social Security and Medicare are successful programs? Are being managed successfully?
Well, a lot of people rely on them day in and day out, but let us pick it up. Noam Levy, what do you say to this line of concern? You hear Karen's unease, even now.
Well, I mean, Karen is reflecting unease that's pretty widespread. I mean, that's part of the reason why public support for this healthcare overhaul has been slipping. It is a very large issue. There are a lot of unanswered questions at this point. To just take one of the issues that Karen raised, initially dealing with what will and will not be covered. You know, I think that is a problem that this legislation is seeking to address. A lot of people right now don't know what is covered and what is not covered. It may be that when there is further regulation of the insurance market, that it may be, in fact, become clearer what needs to be covered and what can't be covered. But the broader problem here, of course, for the president and for congressional Democrats pushing health care reform is that if the healthcare sector of the economy is huge. It's one-sixth of the economy. It's enormously complex. The rules vary from state to state. The federal government has a role in regulating. Insurance companies each design their own plans. They negotiate their own rates with doctors. So changing a system that complicated is inherently a very complicated process. And unfortunately, I doubt that that the president or anybody else who's trying to change this system will be able to do it in a way that removes the inherent complexity in healthcare.
But his point last night, we've done big things before, and if we don't do something, it will croak us. Noel, let me get a call from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and Sean. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I'm just wondering if the Republicans might be making a serious strategic error in just opposing the bill on political grounds. And I think that the points that the president laid out last night were very common sense. And I think that, you know, once the bill's passed, and I think something will be passed, I think that if it contains what he laid out, people's fears are bound to be laid to rest. And I think the bill, I would imagine, would become quite popular. And I just think it could be a long-term problem for Republicans who just opposed it, like you said, without being willing to put in any work to actually change it for the better.
We'll get Noam's view on that. Let's hear the president on just that subject of scoring political points and where we're headed. Here's President Obama last night.
Too many have used this as an opportunity to score short-term political points, even if it robs the country of our opportunity to solve a long-term challenge. And out of this blizzard of charges and countercharges, confusion has reigned. Well, the time for bickering is over. The time for games has passed. Now is the season for action. Now is when we must bring the best ideas of both parties together and show the American people that we can still do what we were sent here to do. Now is the time to deliver on health care.
Noam Levy in Washington, can he do it? Looking at the politics right now, public opinion right now, and the big push you heard last night, does it look to you as though it can happen this year?
I actually think it does. There are a number of fundamentals that support the president's campaign, among which are the following. Four of five committees on Capitol Hill that deal with health care have actually advanced bills. So the process is actually quite far along, notwithstanding all of the pyrotechnics at the in town hall meetings across the country. Mm-hmm. So when the president makes this speech, he's making it at a time when legislation is moving forward on Capitol Hill. Secondly, I think your two guests representing slightly different wings of the Democratic Party, there is a show, I think, that there is a broad recognition among Democrats in Congress and, frankly, around the country that passing health care reform is as much a political imperative for them as it is perhaps a policy imperative. They have more to lose if nothing passes than they do if things fall apart. So I think those two things together, and I guess I would add one more thing, and that is that a lot of the major interest groups in healthcare, including some who have been quite critical of past efforts mm-hmm. to change the healthcare system, the American Medical Association representing doctors, the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, remain interested in trying to get something through. That's very important, and I think bodes pretty well.
The day after the big speech, there's optimism that something will happen here on the healthcare reform front. A big push certainly by the president last night, and much more to come. Noam Levy with the Los Angeles Times in Washington. Thank you very much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks to all of our callers, to Congressman Adam Schiff, to Congressman Anthony Weiner of New York. Join us again. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.